Welcome to Travel Itch Radio, the show that lets you scratch your lust for travel from the friendly confines of your home. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, and this is the 290th episode of Travel Itch Radio. Every Thursday night at 8 Eastern, we bring you exciting and often exotic guests from the world of travel, foreign and domestic. We visit with hoteliers, airline executives, authors, photographers, publicists, and others in the travel world, but rarely so special a guest as tonight when we have my longtime friend, award-winning travel journalist and author, Michael Schumann. Welcome to Travel Itch Radio, Mike.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, thank you so much for making time for us. And, Mike, you are probably the most prolific freelance newspaper travel writer in the United States. Just to let our listening audience know, tell us some of the papers where your byline has appeared.
Well, thank you for the compliment. And I've been in over 200 newspaper travel sections. I mean, some of those were, you know, from papers that had wire services or, you know, picked up by the wires, but I've been in over 200 and some really, you know, big ones and some small ones. I mean, the Boston Globe, Los Angeles Times, New York Daily News, the Philadelphia Inquirer, Denver Post, but also some for, you know, small communities where they don't have a large circulation, but they're looking for local copy.
Well, some Travel Itch Radio listeners know you as an author, too. I know you've written 46 books. What were some of your subjects?
Well, I did a few on travel, some on New England, one on New York State. But it was difficult because there were small publishers, and they kept changing hands, and I didn't know who I was working with, you know, after they changed hands. So I started doing biographies for the young adult market, which is basically in like middle school age, depending on the readership, could be a little younger, a little older. And I've done a lot of biographies of all sorts of figures. I mean, the first one I did was Elie Wiesel, and I actually met him and interviewed him. I did an awful lot on statesmen and presidents. I didn't get to speak to any presidents, but I spoke to people who worked for them and people who knew them. And now, the last few years, my publisher has wanted to do the social studies books aren't selling as much, so they're doing a lot of books on pop culture figures, actors and singers. I mean, there's plenty of information on the internet about these people, but an awful lot of it is totally false. So I did Will Smith, I did recently Beyonce, Adam Sandler. I actually, several years ago, I did Bill Cosby before all the stuff broke about him. I mean, who knew at the time? But I doubt that. I'm sure a lot of librarians have taken that book off their shelves by now. But it's a lot. They're both fun, travel writing and, you know, doing the biographies. Because I like doing research and I like interviewing people.
Well, I was going to ask you, how you go about doing a book, Mike? Do you pitch publishers? Do you have them come to you? Or do you work with a literary agent?
Well, I've never worked with an agent because most of the publishers I work with are small publishers. I mean, the agents are good for, like, you know, Simon & Schuster and, you know, Little Brown or the big mega companies. But most publishers are a lot smaller, and there was nothing really an agent could do for me. Because the contracts are pretty standard. It doesn't matter who you are. And the only thing an agent could do for me is take 15% of my income, basically. So I've never felt the need to work with an agent. As far as the stories, the biography topics, sometimes I'd suggest them. Sometimes they'd come to me with one. So, it's a little bit of everything.
As a freelance writer, Mike, you also pick your subjects for your travel articles, and you're known for finding really unusual angles and creating stories editors have not seen before. Would you share some of the ideas and the topics that helped got you published?
Yeah. What I found was that general destination topics, like everything there is to do in Chicago, everything there is to do in Montreal, etc., didn't sell as well as specific topics, mainly because a lot of the information is available over the wire services, and those topics have been done to death. Excuse me. So I was always looking for, and first of all, anything that was timely. So if there was an anniversary coming up, I would look for whatever's going to be taking place in regards to the anniversary. Like we just 1917 when JFK was born, 2017 was his 100th birthday, and I knew that, so I went to visit the sites in Boston, and I wrote an article about that. Sometimes I would just see ideas. Sometimes if I was going to be in an area, I go through the AAA books and see, because there's always something offbeat. And sometimes I would just see something in another newspaper, not necessarily in the travel section. The Boston Globe did a piece maybe back in the 90s on the first McDonald's, Ray Kroc's first McDonald's, the first actual McDonald's by the McDonald brothers were in California. But Ray Kroc's first McDonald's was in the Des Plaines, Illinois, which is a suburb of Chicago, and it opened as a museum, and it looks just like it did, in 1956. And they had it on the Globe. It wasn't in their travel section. It was like in the food section or maybe just general features. But I thought, this is a great article. I wonder a great topic. How many people have done this? And I went to Chicago, and then Des Plaines, and it was a very big seller for me. Ran in, I don't know, maybe 30, 35 different newspapers.
Plus free hamburgers.
Yeah. That's true. Free French fries. I mean, who's going to turn it down?
We're talking with award-winning travel writer Mike Schumann. Mike, how do you pick the places you want to go? And are they family decisions, or do you usually travel by yourself?
I've traveled by myself a little bit. Usually it's with my family or before we had kids, my wife and I. Usually these are places that I want to go, and I could always find some stories. Like I said, I would look in the AAA book or press releases, and I'd find some really interesting topics. I would, well, for one thing, I took my kids. I got some of my best quotes from my kids, so that helped a lot, taking them along. And other topics, decisions. I mean, so, well, like, okay, my daughter, one of my daughters is really into Harry Potter. So when they opened up the Harry Potter's, Wizarding World of Harry Potter at Universal Orlando, that was something she really wanted to do. So, like a good father, I said, well, let's do that. And I did a trip, we drove down there, and I got all sorts of stories in Orlando, and even with the Harry Potter ride thing that had already been publicized to death. My other daughter is really into sci-fi and fantasy, and there's a big convention called DragonCon that takes place in Atlanta every Labor Day weekend. I mean, they rent out 5 hotels downtown. This is a huge thing, and they get some of the best speakers, not just sci-fi people, but people who have starred in, actors or actresses. I mean, Ed Asner was there the year she was there because he was in the movie Up, which qualified as fantasy. So while we were there, while she was going to the convention, I was doing stories on the side. There's a very good Southern Jewish museum, the Bremen Museum in Atlanta, so I did that as a story. And, there's several other, the botanical gardens there are beautiful. So it was a little bit of both, but usually it's something I want to do.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Atlanta because I was just there last weekend and I went to the Varsity, which this year is celebrating its 90th anniversary, and it was the world's largest drive-in for many years. So that's a story too, right there, the Varsity. Have you ever been there?
No, I never have, and I should have when I was there. But
Well, to give you
the market's
another excuse to go back to Atlanta and see a Braves game too.
doing it. Yeah, definitely. Absolutely.
Okay, we're talking with award-winning travel writer Mike Schumann. Mike, balancing travel time, writing time, and family time is difficult for any freelance travel writer, including me. You've been doing it for so long that you must have a special formula that works. Could you tell us what it is?
Well, I don't know if I'd say it's a special formula, but I usually travel with my kids, so I wasn't away from them that much. They would be, they enjoyed the vacations, and when they were young, I did a lot of family travel stuff, And you know, now they're older, they have their own lives, they don't travel with us as much. But when they got older, you know, we were doing things like when the Bill Clinton Presidential Library opened in Little Rock, or the George W. Bush Library in Dallas. I'm a big fan of presidential history, so I took them along. And I never was. I know a lot of writers go on the road and do, you know, especially young adult writers. They speak to school groups, and these have, you know, like you know, presentations about their books and all that. And I guess they make good money, but I just never wanted to be away from my kids. So, and the other thing is, a lot of my articles, I have a great reservoir of articles, and some of it was just a matter of updating them. They were good for, you know, 2 or 3 years, as long as nothing had changed. So that saved me time and money also. You know, the McDonald's Museum article, that probably ran in 30 papers over the course of maybe 3 or 4 years, until then, you know, then it got too old and I dropped it.
Okay. Well, since you and I are roughly the same age, Mike, you've been doing this for almost
No,
50 years.
you
In that
better
time,
think Go ahead.
travel has become more difficult. Has travel become more difficult, in your opinion, especially for someone who lives in Keene, New Hampshire?
I don't think so. I mean, Keene is actually a really good location because it's like right in the center of New England. So if I want to, I mean, I'm like a 2 or 3 hour drive from all these wonderful topics. You know, these, you know, the Cape Cod, Cape Ann, the coast of Maine, Newport, Rhode Island. You know, some of the cities, Hartford and Boston. You know, the hills of Vermont—they're all really pretty close. And when I want to, you know, usually every year I'll take a long trip and pick up some stories, and it's really not all that difficult for me.
So most of your trips are in North America, yes?
The U.S. and Canada, and the reason for that is that I'm, you know, my writing is a business. I know a lot of people do it as a hobby, but like for you, it's a business. For me, it's a business. And like any business, our goals are to keep our expenses down. So I get paid. It doesn't matter if I'm writing an article about, you know, buying art in Monte Carlo or country inns in Vermont. I get paid the same amount of money. So of course I'm going to do the one that, you know, it's close by, and I don't have as much travel expense. And a lot of people realize that. They think, who are not in, you know, in the business, they think it's, you know, jet setting all around the world. But you know, if you run this as a business, you want to keep your expenses down. So, you know, I mean, Paris, I love Paris, it's exotic, but cost me a lot less to travel to Vermont. And the other thing also is
Okay.
that with the big, you know, a lot of international travel, a lot of that, well, especially now, it's covered by the wire services that newspapers subscribe to. And there's more the offbeat stuff, that local stuff. A lot of papers always, from day one, they wanted regional copy. They'll run a lot of other stuff too, but they always wanted something regional. And when I travel the United States, you know, I can find something in Illinois, and you know, I can sell their papers in you know, the Chicago Tribune or the Sun Times or the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. So, yeah, most of my trips are, you know, I've been in North America mainly because that's, you know, I'm trying to make money.
So you're really your own syndicate. You can sell the same paper to same article to non-competitive papers, right?
Exactly. And that's always been a big boost with newspapers. Now that's changing a little with, you know, with the internet. I know I don't have to tell you, but a lot of publishers, you know, they have these draconian contracts. They want first rights, which was never a problem because in the past, you know, if a paper, if an article ran in that or the Philadelphia Inquirer, and I sold it to the Denver Post, it was very unlikely readers of the Denver Post would see an article that was in the Philadelphia Inquirer. Well, now with everything on the internet, you know, they're being really careful about it. So you know, that it, I mean, it's such a remote chance that somebody in Denver will flip on the Philadelphia Inquirer's website, but stuff like that happens. So they're really, a lot of newspapers now want first rights or exclusive rights. So it's not as easy as it used to be. I mean, the internet has made a lot of things easier, but it's also, you know, hurt a lot of people, and, you know, who rely on, you know, spreading information. at least as far as
and
making
also
a living.
Companies like Gannett buying up so many newspapers. My Bergen Record, which is the second largest newspaper in New Jersey, was acquired by Gannett, and the Bergen Record now looks exactly like USA Today. So that's another problem.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, because they're all buying up. There's a lot of that going on, so it doesn't surprise me in the least.
Okay, I want to tell our listeners that they're listening to Travel It Radio with Dan Schlossberg and special guest Mike Schumann, a very good longtime friend. Find the archive show on blogtalkradio.com or check out Travel It Radio on Facebook. We're also on iTunes. Mike, are most of your trips done by plane, train, boat, or automobile?
Most by automobile. I've done some, you know, I've flown and I've done some, I did a cross-country train trip once. It was enjoyable. I got my curiosity settled, but I don't think I'd do it again. I mean, that's a long time on a train, and it's not like you're in a car where if you're itchy, you can just step out and, you know, go get something to eat or something. I mean, you're on the thing, and it was great for the scenery, but I'm glad I did it, you know, just once. I still take a couple of cruises. I just cruise to the Bahamas, so I do some by boat, but mostly it's by automobile.
And they say getting there is half the fun, but has flying become more of a hassle than a pleasure?
You know, again, it's been so long since I've flown, since I really specialize on domestic travel. And I, you know, if I'm driving, my mother's from Los Angeles, so a lot of my cousins are out there. My wife is from Los Angeles. So when we went, we would usually drive and take, you know, 10 or 12 days. And I'd probably pick up 10 or 12, maybe 15 new travel articles on the way up and back just by stopping in some of these small towns and small cities across the what usually are known as the flyover states. But they have a lot of interesting, you know, things to see and do in some of those states. And, again, the local papers want stuff. They don't care if they should even some of the smaller ones, like there was a paper in Springfield, Illinois. I can't think of the name of it. But they bought quite a bit of my stuff there. It was about the Midwest. They weren't interested in anything about, you know, Los Angeles or New York. So, that, again, just for my business reasons, I drive a lot. Luckily, I like driving.
Yeah, apparently. We're talking with award-winning travel writer Mike Schumann. Mike, your kids are grown now, but was it difficult to travel with them when they were younger?
No, amazingly, they were great travelers, and we took some really long trips. And toddlers or you know 5 or 6, 7 years old, we'd give them some books, we'd put on a tape, and we stopped at places like Sesame Place, and that's what I wrote about. Or any you know. Like I said, a lot of family travel, and when they got older, they've never had a problem. They have so much to do now with their headphones and their smartphones and everything, you know, that they just they just settle right in. So that was never really a problem.
That's great. And for somebody who travels so much, I'm sure you have favorites: best destination, best hotel, best airline, best restaurant. Please share with our Travel It Radio listeners your favorites.
Well, probably my favorite international city is Jerusalem, because it's absolutely fascinating with the different cultures that come together there, you know, not always getting along, but it's still a fascinating place. And it's amazing when you see places that you know, written about in the Bible. I mean, you don't have to be a religious person. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a non-believer, but you read about, you know, it's history. You see the Western Wall and the Garden of Gethsemane, and it's just mind-boggling. And the whole city is just a kaleidoscope. It's a wonderful city to hang around in. Other than that, I love London. It's another fun city. There's always something to do there. As far as small cities overseas, I'd have to say Salzburg, Austria is gorgeous, a beautiful town and a beautiful setting. I like Verona, Italy. That's where you can see Juliet's balcony. That's where Romeo and Juliet, the real story, supposedly took place with the Montagues and the Capulets. As far as domestic travel, I think Washington, D.C. is my favorite city because there's always some museum or some historic site. But I like cities that are also like museum cities where you can have fun just wandering the streets, where the city itself isn't just skyscrapers and suburbs, but there's an awful lot of, you know, historic preservation, like New Orleans. I mean, it's just fun just to walk through the French Quarter or Santa Fe, New Mexico. The whole city looks just like it did, you know, Spanish colonial times. If there's any new buildings that are built, they have to be built in the old adobe style. And there's a lot of original buildings dating to the 17th century. And one other fun city, if anyone goes to Alaska, Skagway, Alaska was the base for the gold rush in the late 1890s. And it looks just like a city. It looks just like it did in the 1890s. Everything's just beautifully preserved. So those are some of my favorite places. As far as hotels,
What about Boston and Philadelphia? Boston and Philadelphia are probably America's most historic cities.
Yeah. Both of them. There's some Boston and Philadelphia, though, are smaller cities. I love going there. I just was there in Boston, you know, in the spring. I love going to the Boston Garden, the public garden, not the TD, you know, not the arena. And in Philadelphia, you know, that what's that big cobblestone or that small alley, that Alfred's Alley?
The smallest street in the country.
And there's one of my favorite places to stay is right there in historic Philadelphia. I like, you know, I mean, the four-star hotels are great. It's great to get pampered and all, but I like these little, you know, funky B&Bs. Thomas Bond House, which is right in the historic district. You walk right into, there's no big spreading lawn or anything. It's a downtown hotel. It was built in, offhand, I'd say it must have been the late 1700s, I believe. And it's just a fun place to stay. I mean, you get the whole historic atmosphere right there. It's just, it's walking distance to all the historic sites. And it's a very safe neighborhood. And I like, another one that I like, you ever done the old Route 66, the Wigwam Hotel?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, if you stay at the Wigwam Hotel in Holbrook, Arizona, it's one of the last of the real kitschy lodging places that were set up before the internet. It's still there. I don't know, maybe it's like 80 years old. What's interesting is that the hotel rooms are in fake teepees, not wigwams. I mean, they're made of concrete, but it should really be the teepee motel. But the rooms are around. It's just a cool place to stay. And they have a couple of, you always have some old cars there from the, you know, 40s and 50s. And I love staying in places like that, funky little places.
For somebody who travels so much, I already asked you, but best airline. Got to ask you about best airline.
You know, I don't know if I can answer because it's been years, really, since I've flown anywhere because I really specialize in, you know, in regional stuff. So most of my traveling is, you know, like I said, by car. So I don't know if it's probably the airlines have changed so much since I really last flew anywhere.
Okay. Well, let's move on. We have a common love of baseball. Do you try to work in a game or two into your travel schedule, especially your beloved Red Sox?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, excuse me, last year I went to I finally hit the 30th of all the current ballparks, 30 current ballparks. I finally went to all 30 when I went to a ball game in Atlanta at SunTrust Ballpark. I've always worked in. I've done some articles on the ballparks. It's interesting because it's so much of what you experience. I mean, two people can go to the same ballpark and have totally different experiences, which is what I discovered. A lot of it depends on where you sit, what kind of weather it is, whether the game's interesting or not. There's a lot of variables like that. But I've been to, now I can say I've been to all 30. And I have, other than Fenway and Wrigley, which belong in their own category, I'd have to say my three favorite are Pittsburgh and Camden Yards in Baltimore and San Francisco. Just gorgeous place. Pittsburgh might be the nicest. Too bad they don't have a rich team to compete.
Yeah. And Coors Field also, I think, is a beautiful ballpark.
Of course.
And I also hit my 30th ballpark last year when I went to the All-Star game in Miami. SunTrust Park was number 29 for me.
So really?
We're more or less on the same page.
Yeah. I did an article about that ran in a few newspapers. I'm sure it's online if people want to look at my name, you know, Google my name and ballpark article or something.
I can relate to this next question, Mark. How hard is it for you to work at home, and do you have your own office where you can barricade yourself in and work in peace and quiet?
Yes, I do. I have my own office. I'm in the bottom
floor
of a race ranch, and yes, I can barricade myself in, shut the door, and the only big distraction is me now with the internet. It's so easy to get distracted. You know, before the internet, it was I might well go into the den and, you know, see what Phil Donahue was on or something. But after a few minutes of that, I would get tired of it. I would come back to my room and my office and just write. And it's a little more difficult now with all these distractions. You know, writers procrastinate, whether they love their work or not, they do. And, you know, if I'm at a point where I can't think of a good segue to the next paragraph, or I can't think of the right choice of words, you know, I might go click on some of the, what they call it, clickbait, like, you know, 20 celebrities went bankrupt or something, total junk like that. But I've got to be careful to stay, you know, deadlines help you keep your prompt.
Okay, time is running out. So who is the most influential person in your professional life?
Well, not to suck up to you, but you gave me my first break, so you're definitely one of them.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
My wife has been behind me even in the old, you know, the hungry days from day one. I had some good teachers at Syracuse and at USC, where I have 2 degrees. I had a great high school teacher, but she was a writing teacher. I dedicated one of my books to her because she really I always thought I could write, but she really gave me the confidence that I could do this as a career.
And just so our listeners know, Mike and I both went to Syracuse University and earned journalism degrees. I was a few years ahead of him, but we got together later on and we became very good friends. And our listeners always like to know more about our guests, so please share where you were born, raised, and schooled, obviously Syracuse, how you got into journalism, and how you became a professional travel writer.
Well, I was born in Hartford, Connecticut. I grew up in West Hartford. The only thing I really ever felt I was good at was writing. I'm not one of those jacks of all trades. I was horrible in science and math. You know, I liked history and stuff, but writing was my gift. I think that's what I was meant to do. And I went to college. I knew there were a lot of people freshman year that had no idea what they wanted to major in, but I specifically chose Syracuse because of the Newhouse School. And then I got a master's degree at Southern California in professional writing. And the travel writing I love doing it. I love going new places. I love writing about these places. And I'm talking to people, for the most part, that want to talk to me. You know, I've done a few other things like business writing, and it's like, you know, you have to, you know, basically sign over your firstborn before they'll talk to you, which is understandable. They don't want their business secrets spread. But,
that's true. Mike, I'm sorry, but we're out of time. I got to do my close. So special thanks to longtime friend Mike Schumann, an award-winning travel journalist. Google him. It's Michael Schumann, Schumann. Thanks for joining us on Travel It's Radio tonight.
It's my pleasure. It's great talking with you.
Thank you. And next week on Travel Itch Radio, our guest is going to be travel writer Tara Nurin. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg saying thank you for your time. This time, until next time, good night.